This is Lars. Thanks again for checking out my podcast. Enjoy your day and the show, and let's make America great again.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome to Wednesday on the Radio Northwest Network. It is great to be with you. Glad to take your calls from all over this wonderful region. And while we are going to focus on the issues of the region, I do want to make this mention that tomorrow is the big testimony back in Washington, D.C. by former effectively fired FBI Chief James Comey, who is... Yeah, I guess he's going to use the word loyalty. He's going to say that at one point, President Donald Trump, much maligned by the left-wing media, expected him to show loyalty to the man he was working for. I would merely ask you that within the law, do you think that any boss expects any employee to be loyal to the boss? And, of course, to the cause that you're working on. If you're the FBI director, you're supposed to do your job. Go out and find out bad people who've done illegal things, like, for example, Hillary Clinton, who admitted breaking the law. And then James Comey carried water for her and explained why, oh, you can't possibly prosecute her. I don't think he was being loyal to America at that point. So did Donald Trump have a reason to ask James Comey, are you going to be loyal to the administration? Or like so many others who are apparently working in the federal bureaucracy right now, are you going to try to undercut the president of the United States? Because there are a lot of people doing that, even people willing to break federal laws, steal secrets, expose national security documents and the like. So is there a reason for a president in a situation like that to ask for loyalty? Do you think that the folks who work for Jay Inslee in Olympia and Kate Brown in Salem expect loyalty from their employees? And do you suppose that those employees try to undercut the actions of Governor Inslee or Governor Brown that they might be handed a pink slip? I don't know. The left-wing media seems to be going crazy with this today, just in the last hour or so, since we found out some of the, like everything else in D.C., leaked early testimony that James Comey will deliver tomorrow, that he will say that President Trump expected loyalty from him. Do you think that Barack Obama demanded loyalty from the people who worked for him? I don't think there's any doubt of it, and I think some people left because they couldn't be loyal or because they weren't serving the cause. So, having said that about that, let's get to the Northwest. Will raising the age to buy tobacco cut back on new smokers? That's the idea behind a bill that was making its way through the legislature in Salem until it was stopped by a lady who used to work as the deputy director of the Department of Human Services. In other words, she got paid a good fat public salary for years to advocate for things like that. And now she's working as a lobbyist on behalf of the tobacco companies. Oh, and by the way, she's from the Democrat Party, so never mind the double standard. Without double standards, the Democrats wouldn't have any standards at all. But it's today's quick poll. Will raising the age to buy tobacco cut back on new smokers? And should Margaret Carter have disclosed that she was lobbying for a big tobacco company? And how are the Democrats going to let that sit in Salem? Today's quick poll is brought to you by Dan Jones Conveyor Trucks. Rock, gravel, sand, or topsoil. Let the Dan Jones trucks put it where you want it and save your aching back. We've got props and kudos for America's first all-wood high-rise building, and I'll tell you the details behind that. Should a university, in this case, Evergreen State College in Olympia, allow students to intimidate other students with baseball bats on campus? And if the answer to that is a sensible no, then why isn't the college doing more to stop some of the students in this idiocy of walking around on campus with baseball bats? And because of their racial animus, I have to tell you, the people walking around with baseball bats are people of color, and the folks that their animus is directed toward are people of pallor, like me. Why not just cancel graduation altogether? Because Evergreen State College finds its own campus is so dangerous that it can't host the graduation of students there, so they're moving it to Tacoma. We will talk to Pulitzer Prize winner Nigel Jaquis today about a really great investigative story into Senator Margaret Carter, former state lawmaker, and we'll talk about that as well. Turns out that illegal aliens were getting food stamps, even though it's illegal, and now it appears they're quitting because they're afraid they might get caught out. Why can't 911 police dispatch? Why can't they answer the phone in the required time? The national standard is that if you're running a 911 dispatch center anywhere in America, that you're supposed to answer 90% of the calls within 10 seconds. In one Northwest major city, they're not meeting the standard, but 30% of the time. They miss 70% of the time. And this is not a new problem. This has been a problem that's been going on for years. And now we find out they've been lying about some of the numbers that rate their competency. Why keep on funding mass transit when it's failing? We'll talk about that. And why aren't teenagers working in the summer anymore? I've got some really disturbing numbers for you from a brand new report that suggests the labor force participation rate among teenagers is on a 30-year decline. Senator Patty Murray is still crazy. She's from Washington State, of course, and she's all upset because of the new man put in charge of the Federal Department of Education's Higher Ed Division. She doesn't like him much at all, but you're not going to believe what she had to say about him. And has the governor of Oregon been playing hooky from her job to push her campaign on the taxpayers' dime on our time? We'll get to all of that and your phone calls and emails. You want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism? It's right here every day on the 21-station network of the Radio Northwest Network. Call in at 866-439-5277 or send emails right to me, talk@LarsLarsen.com.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense, presented by the Ryan Group, where they guarantee to sell your house in 29 days or less, or they'll buy it. 29andgone.com.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
No left-leaning, dead fish rapper bias. No mega TV network liberal agenda. Just the cold hard facts from Lars.
Oregon schools fall far short of the funding they need to educate the kids. At least that's the story you've been hearing this week from television and the Daily Dead Fish Rappers and the like. But take a look at the actual numbers and you see a different story. Oregon provides about $15,000 per student per year. It's just short of that number. And Washington State, not much different. And by the way, that's not my number. It's the number provided by the National Education Association, the largest teachers union in America. $15,000. The average classroom in the state has 25 students, which means that classroom gets $375,000 of your taxpayer dollars to make sure that education happens there. The salary of the teacher and the benefits account for at most $100,000 of that. So where does the rest of that money go? Nobody really seems to know. I do know this. I visited Pacific Crest Academy yesterday to speak with 6th, 7th, and 8th graders, great students, and we had a great conversation. At a school where the classrooms are small and the instruction is personal because class size is small, full year tuition for private education at that school, less than half of what the state spends, with crowded classrooms and a dismal graduation rate. It's time for school vouchers and it's time for school choice. From my Facebook page, Lenora Lee writes in with a post on that subject. As a homeschool parent, I still pay into the tax base for schools, and I have to pay for all my supplies and curriculum. My kids can't use the High School Connections College program for free classes to add to their high school classes that the public school kids have access to, and I have to pay for all the extra things like music and art that we take in the community that public school kids get to take at less cost if they are considered low income. We have no way to qualify for low income. We have a brand new middle school being built in Springfield with amazing kids full of potential going in and thoughtless drones on the way out.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now.
I'm going to give today's Daily Grill to the city of Portland in this case for failing to meet the national standard for quickly answering 911 calls, and to any other cities that are also failing that standard. Today's best email, but you can send more to talk@LarsLarsen.com, comes in from James Cahill. Lars, so Amazon wants to attract food stampers. I don't see how this ends well. If somebody can't or won't pay the modest toll to be a Prime member, is this a customer you want anyway? I suspect they will be high maintenance, whiny, high return, and fraudulent customers. Instead of shoplifting at Walmart, they can stay home and defraud online. Nice. Be careful what you wish for, Jeff Bezos. Signed, James. Back in just a moment with your phone calls and your emails and a lot to talk about today. I'll even take calls on Comey. Do you think it's unreasonable for a president to expect loyalty from the people
who work for him within the law and within the demands of their job? Does he have a right to expect loyalty? And should a university like Evergreen State College allow students to intimidate other students with baseball bats on a campus that is now so dangerous, the college itself says it's too dangerous to hold our graduation ceremony on from that college? Back in just a moment, live on the Radio Northwest Network, you've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Pleasure to be with you and glad to get your phone calls and your emails. Doniva Davis writes in, Lars, recently I was given a nice raise along with some appreciation for my dedication and loyalty to my employer. There must be something to that. You see, there are folks in the mainstream media who say, well, the president wanted to have loyalty from the people who work for him, including the chief of the FBI, who hadn't done exactly a bang-up job in the last year and a half or so, given that he described the crimes of Hillary Clinton and then said, but she shouldn't be prosecuted for them. That I think, is a little bit crazy. Is it unreasonable for any boss, including and especially the president of the United States, to say, can I expect your loyalty? Now, I don't expect people to go out and break the law for their boss, even if he's the president of the United States, and I don't expect them to get outside their task. If you've assigned somebody a task and the boss says, oh, I want you to come and do some things on the side personally for me, no, that's not law. That's not loyalty. But loyalty to the task and loyalty to the people who call the shots. And by the way, I just remind you, the head of the FBI serves at the pleasure of the president of the United States, just as most of us serve at the pleasure of our bosses. I don't think this is outrageous at all. But if you're watching this afternoon's or listening to this afternoon's news coverage, you would think that it was outrageous that a president might say, I expect loyalty from the people who work for me. Let's go to Grant. Hey, Grant, sounds like you might be a little bit of a naysayer. Welcome to the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show.
Certainly. Thanks for taking my call. Been a listener for years, and I'm definitely on the other side of the spectrum from you. And I've come to take for granted, rather, that you will make sensible arguments that are based in what I would determine to be a shared consensus reality. Now,
what
we're dealing with, essentially what I'm saying is that we all play on the same level playing field, even though the rules may not suit us from time to time.
Yep.
And now that we're dealing with a situation that is just, it's unique in that we've never had a president met at his inauguration with so much controversy, and then to take the characters that are, you know, playing this game with him essentially, and him essentially doing what he can to stack the deck. I've never seen you defend a person so devoutly, Lars.
If you listen regularly, you hear me take issue with things he does. I disagree with a number of things he's done, but when you say he's trying to stack the deck, explain to me what the stacking of the deck is.
Well, I mean, when you have direct, you say that Comey serves at the pleasure of the president.
He does.
Well, he has the unique ability to, basically take the people who can hang him out to dry and toss him into the street.
Except for and this, now, you're starting with the premise they can hang him out to dry. James Comey was the head of the FBI. He was fired because he didn't do his job well. The people who've been investigating the president for 12 months on the allegation that there was some, kind of collusion with Russia have come up with exactly zero after 12 months of investigation by some of the most powerful and generally competent agencies in the world. Literally, they're some of the best people.
Yes, but what we're seeing, Lars, what we are seeing now are the wheels slowly squeaking off of the wagon. We're seeing Kushner being put into some very odd company at this point.
Well, hold on. When you say odd, you're using all these euphemisms. Do you believe the president of the United States has broken the law?
I believe that he has got such a great group of people that are capable of hiding and obfuscating actions underneath him.
No, but hiding what? Because
fighting the actions of collusion with the Russian government and other.
But here's the part I don't understand, Grant. The investigation of alleged collusion by Russia and the Trump campaign, by Comey's own testimony, started in June of last year, 6 months, 5 months before President Trump was even elected, and about 7 months before President Trump took the oath of office. So if you're saying,
and that's only with what we know
Grant,
motions.
Grant, here's the thing I'm having a tough time understanding. If you say, well, the president currently has the ability to hide the ball, Well, who was hiding the ball for him when Barack Obama was president and the investigation was going on for 6 or 8 months and came up with exactly zero before Trump even took office? So if you're telling me he now has the power to hide the ball, I guess he does. If you can show me. But what ball?
Hold on.
Who was hiding the ball for him when Obama was still president for the first 6 months of that investigation?
All of the little minions beneath him, Lars, the people that he's trying desperately to.
Barack Obama was hiding the ball for Donald Trump? That's annoying to me.
No, what I'm saying is that he's had so many people working for him as his underlings, trying to make it seem like there's no, these are not the droids you're looking for kind of action.
Well, except for this, Grant, have you noticed something? I know you're on the other side of the spectrum from me.
Sure.
Does this White House leak more and this administration leak more than any other presidential administration in your memory?
Well, I think that it's been a good 10 years coming, but yeah, I mean, it's leakier than any administration.
Okay, now is that a good thing? Is it a good thing to have a national government where people within the government work to subvert what the government is doing because of their own personal?
I think it speaks greatly to the situation that we're in, and I'm not just speaking part.
I don't know what that means. It speaks greatly to it. If you take this down to a level, it's a little easier to understand. If somebody knew when it became in charge of Boeing, and there were people within Boeing that hated the new guy, and they said, let's leak some stuff out that says the company is all screwed up so we can keep the new CEO from getting anything done with the company. Would that be good for Boeing?
No, it would be bad for everybody.
So is it good? Is it good in America to have a government where the people have chosen a new leader? There are a lot of people who don't like him. I understand that. And now people inside the government are trying to torpedo anything he does to make
Lars, you keep trying to readily correlate everything that's going on in this White House administration to what you would.
All I'm saying is there hasn't been a single positive leak for Donald Trump. All of them have been negative. And you've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Wednesday. We're live on the Radio Northwest Network. I'll be glad to get back to your phone calls and emails because this is the best conversation in talk journalism. But now it's my pleasure to welcome to the program Nigel Jaques, the Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter from Willamette Week. Nigel, how are you?
I'm fine, Lars. I'm glad to be on time with you this week, and sorry about being late for you last week.
No worries. You always deliver great stuff, and you delivered today on a young lady who is, she's been one of my favorite stories because in a lot of ways, Margaret Carter, I think, sums up most of what is wrong with Oregon government. And the latest antics that she's been involved in, you dug into this and nobody else dug this out. So let's paint the picture here. You've got a liberal state that says we want kids to smoke, not to smoke cigarettes. And we know that some of them get started as teenagers. Now, I don't agree with the limitation on tobacco purchase moving from 18 to 21 years of age is going to make a big difference. I figure 19 and 20 year old smokers have plenty of friends who will buy them a pack of smokes. And it also doesn't make it illegal to smoke or consume the tobacco. It only makes it illegal for those under 21, if this passes, to buy the tobacco. But you pointed out something important about why this bill got stopped right in the middle of what looked like a pass. It was on the path to passing, and all of a sudden it got stopped in the legislature. Who made that happen?
That was Margaret Carter, who was the first black woman to serve in the Oregon legislature, served from 85 to 09, then got a five-year vacation at Department of Human Services, where she was paid a lot of money to be deputy director. She retired. She's earning a PERS pension benefit of about $102,000 a year, but she decided to come back and lobby. And after this bill that you just described passed the Senate in March, well, actually 2 days before it passed the Senate, Altria, the world's largest tobacco company, formerly known as Philip Morris, hired Margaret Carter to lobby for them. And she has been able to sideline this bill in the Oregon House.
Did she tell her former colleagues when she was down there talking to people she knew well from 25 years in the legislature that she was lobbying for a tobacco company?
Representative Jeff Barker, a Democrat from Iowa, told me that his colleagues in the House who were lobbied by Margaret Carter said that she did not disclose that. Margaret Carter was unwilling to answer my questions about whether she did or she didn't.
And by the way, just to paint this, you've painted it pretty well, but tell me if I'm wrong about this. So we have a woman who is a black former state representative. Black Americans smoke at a far higher rate and black teenagers at a far higher rate. You have a state that says we want to get kids not to start on cigarettes because they may not stop and they may smoke for a good long time. So we're going to take some actions. And she goes in and helps a tobacco company. I don't have any beef with the tobacco companies. And frankly, I think people should be able to make their own choices. But the tobacco company hires this woman to go in and torpedo this bill.
That's correct. I think it's worth adding that while she was in the legislature, she was known as the biggest advocate, strongest advocate for funding human services, which includes the state's Medicaid programs and other health care programs. So here you have somebody who made her entire legislative career about funding health care, now lobbying for a tobacco company. And look, everybody's entitled to earn a living, although, as I point out in the story, she's already making a very good living from PERS. But her lobbying for a tobacco company is absolutely contradictory to everything that she ever stood for in the legislature and later at DHS. And some people find that troubling.
Well, I find it really troubling, and I'm glad you kind of sketched through what she had done, but just tell me if I'm wrong about any of this. Margaret Carter, I believe, comes out of school, becomes a community college counselor, for whatever value that is. She does that for a few years, runs for the legislature, spends 25 years of the legislature, as you say, advocating for more money for DHS. And then when she finally leaves the legislature, the friendly Democrats say, let's create a position just for her, a position that had not existed before. And I think ceased to exist after she left. I could be wrong about that. And it pays, I think it paid $125,000 or $135,000 a year for a kind of a do-nothing job, a job that had not existed before she held it. She does that, and because of that, because of all those years working as a PERS worker at both the community college, the legislature, and then at DHS, her pension was based on a much higher number than it would have been if it had been based on simply her service in the legislature, if you can call it that. So she takes home, $100,000 plus from PERS for the rest of her life, and now feels she has to go out and make more money by turning her principles around, I guess, and saying, now I'm going to advocate for a tobacco company, and apparently against the very interests that she had once advocated for.
Yeah, you have accurately captured the situation. I think there is an element of hypocrisy here, and I find it unseemly, I guess is the word, and other people in the building do as well. It's not a great situation.
No. So what happens at this point? Is there any ethics violation? She hasn't broken any rules, has she?
Well, I don't think that she's broken any rules. Lobbyists are not really bound by state ethics laws. There are certain things they can't do that would break criminal law, and there's no indication that she's done anything like that. It's simply the fact that she is taking money from people that she spent her entire career advocating against, in effect.
One other point, the other group that might object to this is that she had a powerful black constituent, primarily black constituency, when she was an office holder. You pointed out in the story that black teenagers smoke cigarettes or get into smoking cigarettes at a dramatically higher rate. How much higher?
Well, in Oregon, it's funny. Actually, nationally, blacks smoke less than whites, but in Oregon, that's reversed. In Oregon, they smoke about 50% more than white Oregonians, and so, and actually, nationally and in Oregon, are much more likely to contract lung cancer. So, tobacco, for a variety of reasons, is really, really bad for black Oregonians and black Americans. And so, her constituency, of course, was a rainbow, whatever North and Northeast Portland constituents were, black, white, Asian, Hispanic. But clearly she's trying to make the point when she lobbies that this bill would be bad for minority youth because it would give police officers an opportunity to profile them. There's no evidence of that.
Well, that's hogwash, isn't it? Because I try to imagine the circumstances, Nigel. If you make it illegal for somebody under 21 to buy cigarettes, so let's say that a 19-year-old guy, a black man, says to his buddy who's 22, hey, will you buy me a pack of smokes? The buddy walks into a convenience store, buys a pack of smokes, and I suppose if there's a police officer standing there, as the one man walks out of the convenience store and hands it to the younger man, and if the officer can tell that the younger man is definitely under 21 years of age, I suppose he could write them a ticket. But other than that, how would a police officer use that as a, what do they call it, a predicate reason to go in and hassle a black citizen?
It's actually worse than that, because this, what this law actually does, contrary to some of the misinformation that Carter and other lobbyists are spreading, this law actually doesn't punish the buyer. It punishes the seller.
Ah.
So it doesn't actually, it's not actually going to be illegal to possess, if this bill were to pass, to possess tobacco under the age of 21. You would simply, as a seller, be penalized if you know, if there were a sting or if somebody said, yeah, I bought my smokes at the 7-Eleven and I'm 19 years old, then the 7-Eleven could be penalized, but you would not be. So,
And the person who did the straw purchase of the cigarettes for you, the 22-year-old who buys them for you, he isn't punished either.
Right. This bill is about cracking down on sellers. Oregon doesn't license tobacco sellers, and so the selling of tobacco in this state is much looser than it is in other states where they are licensed. And this is an attempt to stop to make sellers not sell to people under 21. So, obviously, the tobacco companies have an interest in maintaining as large a market as possible, and they don't want to see any restriction on selling cigarettes because, you know, smokers are a declining, dying breed, you might say. And so they spread misinformation, and they've gotten a person in Margaret Carter who commands a lot of respect in the building because she was there for 25 years. People know her. She's a, you know, she's a, an icon in Democratic circles in Salem and in Portland. And so they are using her good name, the good name that she built as a legislator, to spread what appears to me to be misinformation.
Any idea what she's getting paid for selling out?
Don't know that yet. She only registered to lobby for them March 23rd, so we'll know later in the year when they file quarterly lobbying reports, but I hope it's a lot.
It should be interesting. Well, a lot. She's already taken home over $100,000 in retirement, and what is she, 81 now?
She's 81. I say I hope it's a lot because, you know, if you're gonna sell your reputation out, you might as well get paid a lot for it because you can only sell it once.
Understood. Nigel, oh, by the way, she is from the Democrat Party. I might mention that as well. But then double standards aren't a problem for them. Nigel, thanks a lot for the great reporting. You can find it at WWeek.com.
Thanks, Lars.
You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you all over the Northwest, from the Canadian border all the way down to Northern California, and from Idaho all the way to the Pacific. Steve is on the line and is a naysayer, and we always put those first. Steve, what do you and I disagree about?
So we're called to discuss your question, which I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, whether or not the FBI director, whether it was unreasonable to expect that he might have some loyalty towards the president. Is that correct?
Yeah, I said that I don't think it's unreasonable for anyone in any position, private or government, to expect loyalty from the employees who work for them, with the caveat within the law.
Yeah, well, I think the reason we disagree, Lars, is because and really, all you have to do is take a look at the oath that the FBI director takes to hammer this down. You know, the FBI director takes an oath that specifically avoids mentioning loyalty to any individuals, instead dictating that that director direct his loyalties to the U.S. Constitution, which makes sense because it's the job of the FBI director to impartially look at.
Well, virtually the same oath that's taken by the president. So the only question then is, imagine a government where you had no loyalty whatsoever. So you have a president who's elected, who takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. And he says, I'm going to go solve some of the problems the country has. And he starts to do that. And then everyone under him says, well, we don't like the way this guy is doing it. So we're going to undercut his efforts in ways that he can't stop us from doing. And because he can't expect loyalty from us, we shouldn't even be fired when we do things that are at cross purposes with the man who became the president. That deserves the public, doesn't it?
Well, there's a little bit of a difference, a qualitative difference between, pledging loyalty to carry out the lawful directives and orders of your boss and pledging loyalty to sort of just do whatever your boss wants.
No, you know that I'm not. So the reason I put in the caveat about within the law, if Donald Trump says, Comey, while you're in Colombia, bring me back a pound and a half of cocaine, I don't want him doing that. That's not inside the law. And if he says, hey, Comey, come over to my house on Saturday and cut the grass, that's not within the job description of the FBI. But other than that, should a president, should a governor, for example, should Kate Brown or Jay Inslee in Washington be able to expect loyalty? Or when the governor says, I'm going to fix the problems in the Department of Corrections, if the head of the Department of Corrections is not loyal to Jay Inslee and what Inslee says to do, he can undercut that governor in dramatic ways without anyone being the wiser or without anybody being able to stop him. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. So let me answer your question this way, Lars. Yes, I think that they should expect loyalty right up into the point where that person who's providing the loyalty thinks that the law is in play here and they need to play.
Well, can you tell me where Comey is apparently going to testify tomorrow? The president did not obstruct justice. He and Comey's not going to say that he did. Some parts of Comey's.
Wait a minute, Lars. The media has reported that Donald Trump asked Director Comey to drop the investigation.
No, he did not. He said, I hope you can see your way clear to get past this thing with Flynn. Now, there's a difference. Well, there is a difference. And let me tell you why. Let's say Comey had literally heard from Donald Trump something he believed was obstruction of justice, which is what that would be if the president was really obstructing justice. Do you know what Comey's job was at the time if he saw the president trying to obstruct justice? It was to go straight to the attorney general and say the president is attempting to obstruct justice. You should look at the evidence that I have. I'll tell you what happened in the conversation, and you should bring charges against him.
And I agree with you, Lars, and that's why I think that after the testimony tomorrow, both Donald Trump and Comey aren't going to be looking too good.
Well, I don't see, and I disagree with you only because Comey's testimony is already leaking out. Everything in this administration seems to leak early, and the leak says that Comey is going to tell the Congress that he was not asked to obstruct justice. That's I know why that's leaking. I think Comey wants it out there ahead of his testimony. So, and Comey's the only one who controls what Comey is going to say tomorrow. So if he shows up in front of the Congress and says the president did not attempt to obstruct justice, then what's the objection to merely saying that I expect the people working for me to be working with me and not working against me?
Well, Comey has also said that in his testimony tomorrow, he's not going to make any judgments as to whether or not any laws were broken. He's going to put the facts.
Well, that's exactly his job. His job as FBI director and his, you know, was to decide whether or not people were breaking the law and then hand that information to the attorney general for the charges to be brought, if any.
Right. That was his job. And now it's the job of Congress to determine if those laws were broken.
Well, of course. But Comey, at the time he experienced whatever this was in the conversation with Trump, if it had been obstruction of justice, Comey should have acted at the time. And he did not. You've got the Lars Larson Show.